corruption in society, abortion, human trafficking. Should the church care about these issues? And if so, what should we as God's people be doing?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, we all know the world is messed up. We know that there's all kinds of sin in society. There's crime, there is injustice, there's poverty, there's war. Every single second a crime is being committed somewhere in the world. Somebody's being raped, somebody's being molested, something's being stolen, someone's being killed. Are we actually, as followers of Jesus, supposed to do something about this? Is our role to live godly lives ourselves and to help people come to Jesus, and that's how we change society? Or are we supposed to actually get involved with combating injustice and standing for righteousness? Is that part of our role? If so, what in the world do we do? Where do we even start? Michael Brown, thanks for joining us today. It is the 15th of January, which means it is Martin Luther King's birthday. Just saw a note of his daughter Alvita celebrating what would have been his 84th birthday. I remember being in Houston in early 2000, writing my book, Revolution. I was getting ready to preach that night. I was writing my book, Revolution. And I was downloading all these quotes from Martin Luther King, and I was writing this chapter about freedom and liberty, and only later realized that it was that day. It was January 15th when I was doing it. It seemed like the right day. But I'm thinking of that today because I have a guest in the studio with me, a grad from our ministry school, his wife as well, a grad from our ministry school. They are now based in Germany. They're Americans who have left their country. They've got two kids, four and almost two, and they are now based in Germany combating human trafficking, sex trafficking. And this is one of these things that has been under the radar for most Americans, most believers. When we start to talk about what's actually happening and what's even happening in major American cities, most Christians are utterly and absolutely shocked. Justin's going to be filling in on this, and more importantly, we want to talk about the question of what should the church do when faced with horrific things like this happening in our world? What are we supposed to do? Do we pray primarily? Do we pray for the government to intervene? Do we get involved ourselves? If so, what steps do we take? And then what do we do? I mean, you got abortion. You've got all the issues with homosexual activism. The inner cities have gang issues, and not just the inner cities. You've got drug problems. You've got, I mean, I could start listing all the societal problems we have. Where do we start? Perhaps we start with saying, Lord, here I am, send me, use me. Perhaps we start by saying, as a follower of Jesus, I'm called to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world. As a follower of Jesus, I'm called to give myself to a pattern of good works. Perhaps we start with saying, Lord, can you use me to make a difference? Now, if you have a question that you'd like to ask Justin, if you have a question in terms of what may be happening in America, or a question in terms of, okay, what can I do? What can I do as an individual? Or maybe you have some testimony having been involved in these things yourself. Number to call is 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I also want to play a clip. Oh, before this first half hour is out, I want to play an audio clip for you where someone took the speech from President Obama after the Newtown massacre, but has applied it instead as if he was talking about abortion and the slaughter of innocent children. Yeah, it makes for fascinating listening. So, a whole lot to cover today. We're going to talk about some things that are disturbing, but with hope and with vision for change. We'll be right back.
Change the world.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm just looking at some stats that were sent to me. Every year in the U.S., 100,000 children are involved in prostitution. A study of five U.S. cities concluded 300,000 domestic minors were involved in prostitution. The average age of entry into prostitution is 13 years old. Friends, if we talk about moral cultural revolution, we mean the gospel affecting every area of life and every aspect of society. Thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Number to call, 866-348-7884. I'll be giving you a special website as well that you can contact to find out more about what you can do and what others are doing with regard to human trafficking. But my guest in the studio with me, Justin Schrum, he's a graduate of Fire School of Ministry. His wife, Rowan, was a pioneer grad in our school in Pensacola a few years before him. Justin, great to have you on the air with us.
Great to be here. Thanks.
Now you've been in the States traveling for about 6 weeks now?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so you're an American, but you're not living in America now. You've uprooted your family. And you started your family in Germany.
Yep.
How in the world did you end up in Germany? Why leave America, go to Germany?
Sure, we had some relationships. I mean, after we graduated from the Bible school at Fire, we had some relationships with believers that were from our area in Germany. So we had a kind of a sense of relationships and churches there that we could be connected with. But it wasn't until the issue of human trafficking became a real burden from the Lord, and the Lord dropped that down on us, that we felt like Germany was the place to go.
All right, before we get into specifics and how you got this burden, let's just throw out some of the realities of this, because I was aware on a certain level these things were going on. But I remember one Sunday morning service, you and your wife just shared some facts, some stats, which were staggering to hear.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give our listeners an idea of what's happening and the horrific toll of human trafficking.
I mean, one of the greatest, most tragic stats is just simply the numbers that are projected. It's estimated numbers to be about 27 million people that are caught in human trafficking, forced labor. The majority of them will be forced into prostitution because many of them will be women, and many of them, as you mentioned, will be minors forced into prostitution. It's the fastest growing criminal industry in the world. So that's not just prostitution itself as a criminal industry. That's the actual sale of human beings is the fastest growing criminal industry in the world.
And what's the life expectancy of those who've been sold into human trafficking and prostitution specifically?
I mean, the FBI estimated about 7 years for just a prostitute. And then based off of the numbers that are projected on the life of trafficking victims and the experience of trafficking victims, they estimate to be about 4 years when entering into a trafficking situation, especially that of forced prostitution.
All right. Now, do you mean they have a forced career of 7 years in prostitution and 4 years forced into it, or a lifespan of 7 years or 4 years?
Once entering into prostitution, the FBI estimates, based off of their experience, that they have a lifespan of 4 years.
And oh my.
When we interact with the women that we're interacting with, there's no shock to us on those numbers. The disease that many of them go through, forced abortions, sometimes self-inflicted abortions. In fact, one woman recently went to the doctor and realized that her life had almost been lost because she tried to perform an abortion on herself, a woman that was working in prostitution that we have a relationship with.
And what about violence towards these people?
That as well. The clients oftentimes are bringing weapons or just break out in rage against the women, maybe even arguing over payment. And recently a woman that we're dealing with also had her finger broken, and many of them are stabbed in the situations.
What about sexually transmitted diseases?
It's rampant. Many of them decide, the women decide that in order to make more money, they won't use protection or they won't enforce protection, and therefore they open themselves up into a world of disease.
Mm. All right. We've got to trace out how this happens, how people get sold into prostitution and sex trade. What's happening in America? I know you're based in Germany, but great majority of our listeners are in America and will be shocked to know what actually happens in their cities. But before we get into that, how did you and Rowan, you're newly married, you feel called to the mission field, you've got other family members with mission burdens and things like that. This is not conventional missionary work. You're now going to start a family in a foreign country and get engaged in this. How did you get this burden in the first place?
Well, first thing I'd say, of course, as the leader of Fire School, you know, you didn't teach us to be conventional believers. You didn't teach us to think conventionally. So after graduating from the school, it was clear to us that he had a calling for us, as you said, a missionary calling, but it wasn't clear as to what it was. The Lord challenged me to meditate on the book of Isaiah, especially the second half of the book of Isaiah, and challenged me that from that book he would speak to me more about what I was to do with my life. Well, in the process of meditating on that book, one of our missions directors who was in Italy at the time, and he was interacting with a ministry, you're well aware of, Christ is the Answer.
Yes.
They had dealt with a woman, a Nigerian woman, who came up and shared with them that she was being forced into prostitution. The leaders went with this woman to the police and shared with the police. The police said, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do for this woman. It's mafia controlled, and therefore it's too strong and too powerful for us.
Which is all over Italy, especially in the south.
Absolutely.
Right.
And the leaders of Christ the Answer spoke to the missions director that we were dealing with and shared this story and said, what can be done for this woman if the police won't even help? Well, he came back to us and shared that story. And I had just been meditating in Isaiah 49, chapter 49, verse 24 and 25. And Isaiah was asking the exact same question that we were asking. Is it possible to rescue the slave of the tyrant or the captive of the mighty one? Mm. Is a question that he asked, of course, asking of it of exiled Israel. But we in that situation were asking of it of these women who are being held against their will in the sex trade. Is it even possible to help them who are under such tyrannical control? And the answer that the Lord gives, it says, thus says the Lord, I will fight against the one who fights against you, and I will rescue your children. And when those words, I will rescue your children, they jumped out from the page. And at that moment, the Lord said, there's an anointing to free slaves in this generation, and I'm releasing that anointing if you'd be willing to take it.
Really? So you're God's directed you to meditate on Scripture. You're meditating on these verses come to life, and you see this horrific injustice where there's basically no one to help. There's no human help.
Yeah.
When you go to the police and the police say, we can't fight the corruption, we can't fight the mafia and what they're doing. There was someone in the States here involved with fighting sex trafficking, and she said that she has heard this said now from people in the crime industry, that it's far more lucrative to sell a person than to sell drugs, because you can only sell drugs once, but you can sell a person over and over. I mean, these shocking words. So this is just people, evil, wicked people, saying this is a commodity, and I'm going to sell this person. And where do they get them from? How do they get these people and then have the power to force them into prostitution?
Sure, we deal with, also in the U.S., we have a team here in Charlotte. So certainly the dynamic of U.S.-based operations, as you mentioned, are a little bit different in Germany. The majority of women that we deal with are from Eastern Europe or from Africa. And in a lot of the situations from Eastern Europe, they become befriended by a guy who then promises them an opportunity, a life in Germany where they can have a great life and start making a lot of money. Or they're just told that they can get a job. As they go there, their passports are taken, they're threatened, and quickly they're assimilated into the sex industry, which in Germany is a legalized industry.
All right, so we'll come back to that legalized prostitution with prostitute unions in Holland and Germany. We'll come back to that. But this is similar then to what happens, say, in a country like Thailand, where someone will go out to the villages, or Philippines, these different countries in Asia, go out to the villages and say to the family, "Hey, that we have a job for your daughter in the city," and you know they're impoverished, and this way the daughter's going to be able to make money and help the family out, and somehow they're not warned, they're not educated, and these people are sold into it. And again, estimates, we're talking 27 million people, and some feel that's a conservative estimate, don't they?
Yeah, some do. And then, you know, of course, some might also say, I mean, trying to estimate these numbers is like looking for a shadow in a dark room. In all reality, we're dealing with criminal industry, which doesn't happen to, give tax reports.
Exactly.
You know, so we're not getting the clear numbers. But just based off of the experience that we've had, the numbers are real. It's there and it's prevalent.
Got it. All right. What's your website, Justin?
It's thejusticeproject.net. So www.thejusticeproject.net.
All right. And what will folks find when they go to that website?
They'll be able to track with the latest of what's happening with the ministry. They'll be able to see a synopsis of our operations right now that are currently working in Charlotte and also in Europe. And yeah, it's just a good way to follow us. Also, follow us on Facebook, The Justice Project on Facebook. You'll know it's the right one if you see the lion symbol.
All right. We've just got 20 seconds, but is this the kind of thing that every believer can get involved with on some level, making a difference?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're excited to talk more about that.
All right. So, friends, we're not just telling you there's a problem. We want to tell you there's something you can do about this problem. Hey, I've got a question for you. What would Jesus do? Would Jesus just say, too bad. These ladies and boys as well are getting sold into sex slavery and getting destroyed and humiliated and killed. Just too bad. Wish I could do something about it. Or would he do something about it?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, if we stood up to the evil of segregation and the even greater evil of slavery, how can we not stand up to the horrific evil of sex slavery? Michael Brown, thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire. I realized I said before Martin Luther King's daughter, it's actually niece, Alveda King. I was just looking at an article where she's speaking of what would be her uncle's 84th birthday today. It's an appropriate day to be talking about the horror of sex slavery. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm joined by Fire School of Ministry grad Justin Schrum. He and his wife, Rowan, based in Germany. That's where God's called them to make a difference with human trafficking. Justin, before we continue talking about this subject, and then let's get into some of the lives of the people you've met firsthand, what you've seen. We're talking about something that even affects children, even little children, especially in some countries, can be sold into this. Is abhorrent and mind-boggling as this is. And I saw this clip on YouTube. It links a lot of images with pro-life marches and so on into the speech, but these are words that President Obama spoke after the massacre of children in Newtown, Connecticut. And it's framed instead as if he was not talking about that, as if he was talking about abortion. I want us to hear that clip, and then we'll start talking more about the realities of human trafficking. Go ahead, Joey.
They had their entire lives ahead of them. Birthdays, graduations, weddings, kids of their own. This is our first task, caring for our children. If we don't get that right, we don't get anything right. That's how, as a society, we will be judged. And by that measure, can we honestly say that we're doing enough to keep our children, all of them, safe from harm?
Starting in the womb.
I've been reflecting on this the last few days, and if we're honest with ourselves, the answer is no. These tragedies must end. We will be told that the causes of such violence are complex, and that is true. But that can't be an excuse for inaction. If there's even one step we can take to save another child, then surely we have an obligation to try. Are we really prepared to say that we're powerless in the face of such carnage, that the politics are too hard? Are we prepared to say that such violence visited on our children year after year after year is somehow the price of our freedom?
Yep. Think in terms of slaughter of the unborn. When you hear that speech, you think, my God, what are we doing? Think in terms of selling of children into sex slavery and ask, what are we doing? Justin, what you've run into in Germany, does it affect younger kids as well, or younger teens? Is it mainly older ladies? What are you running into? What exists in the culture?
Yeah, we deal some with teenage women, definitely, and also some teenage boys as well. But we see more often teenage women because our team is going into brothels that are more open, the legalized brothels, which deal more in women. So certainly you can see the exploitation that's already happening among young teenage girls.
All right, so hang on. You actually, with a team of other believers, go into brothels or red light district? I mean, how do you... Red light district, that's one thing, walking down a street, but how do you have access to a brothel?
It's kind of amazing. I mean, the law in Germany, or the rules in the brothels, is that women are not allowed to go in, which is, our team consists all of women. I do not go myself into the red light district brothels.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not wise. And
right.
So our team of women, we knew we needed to get in there. There's women that stand at the windows, and we could minister to a degree to them, but behind those women in the buildings were 30 or 50 in one building, and we needed to get to them. So we really began to pray and strategize, and we developed this concept for a salon event, which was a beautification day that would be offered free to the women.
Wow.
We made gift bags, and we started going in there, and through a breakthrough in prayer, one of our coworkers just decided, you know what, I'm going in despite the rule and see what happens. And once again, we had a breakthrough in prayer, so we were confident in the decision. She went in there, the bouncer at the door stopped her and asked her what she was doing. And she turned around with a smile on her face, showed the gift bags that we had and the invitations that we had to the salon events that we were performing. And the bouncer said, fine, go ahead, go in there, you can be free. She went up there, began to pray for the women, prophesied to some of them.
Wow.
Really, the anointing of God was on her in that day. From that point on, every one of the brothels, or nearly every one of the brothels in the red light district in our city, was opened up to our team.
Incredible. So these ladies are in there. They have no way to get out. There's no one they can appeal to. And they're there mainly illegally in the country?
Many of them illegal, absolutely.
All right, so if they got out of there and went to the police, what would the police say?
Well, you know, the police in this context are actually interested in helping the women if they're a trafficking victim. And they recognize that many of the women are being influenced or controlled behind the scenes. But in the situation, they would need the women to be willing to speak. This is this concept of victim identification. It's something that most organizations that are trying to help human trafficking victims, that they have to work towards, which is to identify victims of trafficking in the context that they're in.
Got it. So the fear, why wouldn't they speak?
Yeah, many of them, even if they're not, sometimes we get the image in our mind of human trafficking, and we get it always just the most extreme examples of children chained, you know, to walls or in cages,
right,
which are reality, and we need to pray for those situations. But the vast majority of human trafficking situations are coercion and force that is a psychological one, also debt bondage, and an economic one.
Threats to family back home as well?
Absolutely.
Yeah, friends, listen, we must have an awakening. The only hope of a country like Germany or a country like America right now is a moral and cultural awakening, and it's going to come as the church experiences awakening and revival. And in point of fact, a true revival movement will result in other movements being birthed out of it that bring life and help and wholeness to the culture. That's why I'm strongly encouraging you, friends, to get hold of my 16-hour class on revival. One, Justin, you were in as well. I rediscovered that we actually had it on one DVD.
Oh, great.
One CD, actually, for $20 for the entire class. Think what you could have done with that.
Yeah.
So listen, take advantage of this, friends. We're also giving you free with the class my book, Time for Holy Fire, my most important book on revival. The solution is found at the throne of God, friends. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978 to order. You can order multiple copies as well. 1-800-278-9978, or go to our website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the online bookstore. 1-800-278-9978. To connect with Justin and the work he's doing, go to thejusticeproject.net.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on a very important Tuesday here on The Line of Fire as I sit in our studios outside of Charlotte with Justin Shrum. Justin and his wife, Rowan, are graduates from our ministry school. They're now based in Germany and dealing with victims of prostitution and sex trafficking. If you have a practical question you'd like to ask, 866-348-7884 is the number to call. Justin's website, thejusticeproject.net. Just looking at an article on charismanews.com, the National Weekend of Prayer to End Slavery and Trafficking is a coalition of abolitionists and prayer leaders whose mission is to mobilize prayer in America and to encourage awareness of the issue of human trafficking. Reverend Samuel Rodriguez, president of the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference, the nation's largest Christian Hispanic organization, just presided as the honorary national co-chairman of the Weekend of Prayer, which just took place this previous weekend. Yuri Mantilla, director of the National Hispanic Evangelical Justice Coalition, said human trafficking is a crime against humanity. This modern form of slavery not only violates the dignity and integrity of innocent victims, but also destroys families and targets the most vulnerable members of society. Justin, we can talk about 27 million people. We can talk about horrific stats. We can give general horror stories. But tell me the story of one lady that your team has ministered to. Let's put a name and a face on some of these victims.
Sure. I mean, one that comes to mind is a girl that stands in one of the windows in the red light district. Her name that she gives is Sabina.
For those that aren't familiar with this, because I don't think we have quite the same equivalent here in the U.S., so countries like Holland, Germany, red light districts, a prostitution district. What do you mean a woman that stands in the window?
Okay, yeah, that's great. When in a red light district, there are a series of brothels that line the streets, and at the bottom of the brothel, there's a large window where one girl from the brothel will stand there wearing next to nothing, and the point is to entice and draw the men into that brothel. And so it's really, it's quite like a meat market in a sense. You know, they walk in, see what they
want. Just like window shopping.
Exactly.
Oh. In a country like Holland, you can have whole families, just mom, dad, and kids, just walking through the city. Is the same in Germany?
Yeah. Although in our area, the red light district is a little bit more towards near a university, kind of appealing towards that crowd. But in Amsterdam, as you said, it's right next to the historical area of Amsterdam and right there in the middle of family life.
Remarkable. All right. So one lady that was in the window.
Yes, this girl standing in the window is consistently standing there. She comes from Romania. She's 20 years old. And she was told by her boyfriend, who is an Italian man living in our city, that someday, you know, he'll marry her. But for now, she needs to work for him and, you know, make enough money. You know, he was saying it's hard to get married. We're in Germany. I'm Italian. You're Romanian. But really, we can see clear signs of control. She's often seen on drugs. And she shared with us that on some nights, she may have to service 50 men in one night. And we asked her again, 50 on a good night, quote unquote. And what she means by, of course, good is that also, obviously, there's a lot of money that mostly she will not see. She sends, out of all the money that she would get, even in one night like that, she sends 300 euro to her family per month that she's allowed to send, which is all another thing that keeps the women caught in that web, is that their families are dependent upon them for money and they're allowed to send some, though very little, home.
And does she have a desire to get out of her lifestyle?
Well, you know, with someone like Sabina, if you say, oh, we want to rescue you from this, she would say, that's my fiance that I'm working for and with. So the confusion and the delusion that exists with the women is oftentimes the greatest battle and the greatest threat, not unlike the delusion and the lies of those who are enslaved in the world because of the lies that the world brings.
Amazing. All right. We come back. Let's talk about just the power of prostitution in society. And friends, this is going on. The church is the answer. Jesus is the answer for you and me.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. Look, we talk every day. You hear the announcers say that we're a voice of moral, cultural, spiritual revolution. That means Jesus changing us, and we go and change our world. And if you think of movements that were world-changing, so many arose out of the church. You think of the civil rights movement, it was something that was birthed in churches. The call for justice, the call for equal treatment of women in different countries, the call for justice and protection of the innocent is something that should be written in our hearts, should be something that we identify with. All of the parables and teachings of Jesus about helping the poor and the disenfranchised, this is part of our lives, friends. So I'm blessed when grads from our ministry school go out and they're serving effectively all around the world. They're feeding the poor, they're winning the lost, they're planting churches, they're helping orphans, and they're standing against human trafficking as well. Justin Trum and his wife, Rowan, are in the front lines of doing that in Germany. Let's just take one call, Justin, and then focus on this issue of prostitution and how the man sees the woman and what some of these issues are. And we'll be talking in a way that is appropriate for all listeners. But if you're just saying, you know, I'm picking up my kid at school, and I don't even want to talk about prostitution around him, well, just understand that's what we're talking about: sex trafficking, human trafficking, prostitution. Stephen in Manhattan, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, thanks.
Okay. About this subject, it's really, you know, we plumb the depths of depravity, obviously. But I remember seeing, this is why I bring this up, mention this to your guests, too. I remember seeing a documentary, a German documentary made over here about this subject. And it concerned the child prostitution. And they went undercover with the L.A. police. And you hear the recording. It's like a draw to get the deviants to call them and, of course, get them. And the man on the phone was talking about, blah, 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 how much is this, how much is that. And he goes without missing, skipping a beat with his breath, well, how much would it cost me to kill them? And they said, well, of course, you're a little extra and stuff. This goes on, too, as well, doesn't it? I mean, the people actually buy children to kill them. I believe this is so. Is it so?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, a lot of times the interest is not only sexual, but eventually it gets more into also the desire to control, even to the point of murder.
Yeah, that's, Stephen, you talk about plunging the depths of human depravity. What could we say beyond that? You know, look, and thanks for calling, point that out. You know, Justin, I'm reminded of something as Stephen's calling from Manhattan. Many years ago, when Mayor Koch, Ed Koch was mayor of New York City, he actually instituted a policy that if you got caught with a prostitute, you were the John, that once a week they would read on the radio the names of the men mm-hmm. that were caught with prostitutes. I'm just remembering it was pretty wild.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are TV shows now. They glorify everything. They glorify polygamy. They glorify polyamory. They also glorify prostitution.
Sure.
And just put this wonderful face and, you know, this, you know, this cool career. And you think, what are you talking about? You're talking about a woman giving herself, and in many cases being forced to give herself to multiple strangers every single day. What could be more degrading than that? It's like willingly being raped over and again. But talk to me, Justin, about the psychology of prostitution, the things you've learned, not just seeing this as sin, but understanding some of the social dynamics going on here.
Sure. I mean, we kind of call that the myth of the happy prostitute. I mean, you have the development of this idea that, you know, that this is something that a little girl grew up desiring to do when she was young. Oh, yeah, I can't wait to grow up and become a prostitute. We see that the forces that are behind it, behind the women, the pressures that are behind it, are pushing them into that direction. Recently, there was a research paper that was a research report that was done by the Prostitution Research and Education Foundation, and it was an amazing report that was comparing those who purchase sex with those who don't, and comparing their understanding or the way that they look at women, and especially, of course, as they look at prostitutes. And there was three things that came from that report. By the way, they were interviewing men in Boston, Massachusetts. So this is not wasn't a Germany thing. This was an American thing.
Got it.
Three things that came out. First is that the men who purchase sex do not view women who sell sex as the same or equal status of women, of their own admission. They're a different kind of woman, they would say. Things like that, that would show an inferiority perspective towards the women. The second thing is that of their own admission as well, they're not just interested in the act, but they're interested in the servitude that was demonstrated. That could even include women who are in a strip club and a man who goes to a woman in a strip club. Even though they're not actually experiencing a certain act, they have control. They have a domineering thing that they get to experience, something that otherwise they might not experience with their wives, or their wives wouldn't be willing to do. This woman who's inferior does whatever I tell her to do. That is the second dynamic that makes prostitution itself slave-like in its nature.
Mm-hmm.
The third and final thing is that the one great requirement on prostitutes is that they cannot only do the act, but they have to collude to it. In other words, they have to act like this is something they always wanted to do. And that is the snare that we see so many of the women that we're dealing with in, where we would be talking with them, our team would be talking with them in the brothel 1 minute, in their room, she would be crying her eyes out, begging us for assistance, and 2 minutes later, she would be out front with a smile on her face, enticing a man in. Now, part of you is like, okay, which one is real?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, we recognize that if they do not play what we call the game that kills, then they are not going to be, they won't be able to sell anything, and they pay 130 euros per night for rent to rent the place that they're in. They're in this desperate situation, so they over and over again create a new persona of this is the whole world that I love, and yet they despise it and are internally suffering inside. These three dynamics, the low value of the women who sell themselves, the servitude that they require, and then the collusion that they require, in other words, that they have to enjoy it and act like they like it, creates this web of ensnarement for the women. There is very little, once they enter in, that they can do to get out of that web. And so prostitution itself, which we're concerned about the legalization of prostitution in America, we're highly concerned about that.
You think that's an actual possibility?
We absolutely do. And we see the trend in American perspective towards it. Even though there is an increase, a rise of anti-trafficking in America, and we're thankful for that, there's also an increase of this idea, this myth, of the controls that could be successful in prostitution.
All right, so why would someone try to argue for this? I know people try to argue for legalization of certain drugs and say, look, we have alcohol legal. If you have drugs legal, then you get it out of the hands of the criminals and the whole underground syndicate and so on, and you can put more controls on it. So what are arguments? I mean, it's been legalized in countries like Germany,
sure,
and Netherlands. What would be an argument that someone would raise to legalize prostitution in America?
What's amazing is that we could see some very liberally minded women's rights people that are on
women's
the forefront
yeah.
of arguing yeah. for prostitution legalized, because the idea is this. They think empowering them, they believe that empowering them means getting this tool of their human body to be used for their purpose and for their benefit, ignoring the major signs of abuse that come with this whole dynamic, ignoring these three signs.
Wait, so hang on. So if this woman could sell herself to multiple men every single day, strangers that are, let's understand the dynamic of what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
If they could do it legally and maybe be part of a prostitutes union,
sure,
that they would be empowered?
Yeah, this
what
idea,
kind of sick idea is that?
This idea that their bodies created by God is a tool for them to be able to, well, created by God or created by evolutionary process, was given to them as a tool for them to advance themselves in the world. And part of that is taking advantage of the male addiction to sex and their ability to harness that. It just ignores all the realities that are present. And here's the thing. You'll get one or two women that embody that idea. You will. You'll find some. I mean, I've seen an interview of a German woman in Berlin who is a famous prostitute in Berlin, and she has complete control of her atmosphere and environment. It's the perfect example, or the pretty woman kind of idea, where every one of the women in our in the red light district that we're dealing with, they're all looking for a patron man to become that support for them, and that's what also drives them to continue. This idea that women are in control if we legalize it is absolutely false and wrong. We've seen no examples, only the myth that exists.
Yeah, only the myth. What nonsense. So much for women's rights group. Obviously, most wouldn't say that, but those that do. All right, we come back, Justin. Let's talk about some of the other things that you've been able to do. Many of our listeners may not know some of the things that our grads are doing here in the States, but let's talk practically. Again, the website, friends, thejusticeproject.net. Visit there, become educated, find out what's going on, and say, Lord, what can I do to make a difference?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. Today it is Martin Luther King's birthday, January 15th. Dr. King said, "He who passively accepts evil is as much involved in it as he who helps to perpetrate it. He who accepts evil without protesting against it is really cooperating with it." 866-34-TRUTH. I'm sitting in my studio with Justin Shrum. Justin and his wife, Rowan, grads from our ministry school, and serving with their two little kids in Germany right now, combating human trafficking. Justin, as you and Rowan felt called to deal with this, at what point did you begin to feel overwhelmed and helpless?
I guess at the point when you actually start to get in the real knit and grit of what's happening and hear the stories and have those women whom we're talking with look at you and say, "Can you help me?" Then you're like, "God, can you help us?"
And what about, wasn't a plan initially, first thing you have to do is build a place where the women that are all trying to flee can get to, and then someone says, "We got plenty of places. We got the beds. We just don't have the people fleeing."
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the 1% of all the victims of trafficking are being actually identified. Only 1%, and we can't rescue. You can't help those who aren't accurately being identified, and that's a worldwide problem. We recognize. I mean, we've had FBI people in the government say, "Look, we recognize it's an issue. We recognize it's happening, but getting people to be identified is a huge step." And the Justice Project works especially in that area, both in the Charlotte area and also in Germany.
All right. How is it, say, in America? We're not talking about someone now from a remote village in Thailand, and folks come to the village and say, "Hey, we've got jobs for your daughters in the city." We're not talking about someone being lured out of Bulgaria, Romania into Germany. We're talking about in the States. How does, say, a 13-year-old end up getting sold into sex slavery?
I mean, so much of it just comes down to the psychological and emotional bondage that's developed between the one who starts to pimp her, control her, and then the dynamic of what she enters into. And oftentimes this divide that exists.
Well, is it maybe just like a girl that's a runaway?
Exactly. The divide that's existing within families in America is creating a massive vacuum for trafficking activity. They say that when children run away from their family, they become immediately exposed. In fact, I think 24 to 48 hours, immediately exposed to trafficking situations.
Right, they run away, they're on the streets, and someone knows, you got these evil people that roam the streets. They know the places, they know the bus stops, the train stops, where the kids are coming in, how to spot them, and then how to take advantage of them.
Absolutely. And traffickers also know the look, a look of someone. A look of a girl could be a high school girl that you can see is filled with insecurity, waiting to be preyed upon.
Yeah. And then a lot of these kids we never hear from again.
Absolutely. I mean, there's these missing people reports that are everywhere, and our heart breaks when we hear the reports, because so oftentimes we know that this is where they're ending up, in some sort of dynamic of trafficking and forced prostitution or forced labor in some other way.
Oh, according to a story, December 13th, 2012, a Nevada brothel owner says America is missing out on billions of dollars in taxable revenue by not legalizing prostitution. All right. We'll leave that. In America, a city like Charlotte, North Carolina,
yeah,
This is not just backwoods, some and people being brought in from Romania or some village in the Philippines. This is Charlotte, North Carolina, you know, growing city, rated one of the best cities to live in America, and yet we have a problem with human trafficking here in Charlotte?
It's sadly rated actually quite high. I believe, from what I remember, it's third on the list in nationally for issues of human trafficking. I mean, certainly part of it is its location. The highway systems that are directly linked together with Charlotte makes it a big hub for travel, and travel means trafficking. The highway systems, the transit ways, allow for more movement of people. And many of them end up here in some dynamic of prostitution or stripping and things like that.
All right. What can your average person do? They're hearing this, a lot of them devastated. It's a bit of a state of shock, thinking, what's happening in my city? I live in New York. I live in D.C. I live in Boston. What in the world's happening in my city? They go to your website, thejusticeproject.net. Let's take just a couple of minutes. What are some practical things that everybody can do?
Yeah, I mean, in many of the regions now, there's little task force that are developing in the region to start to work together with the police. It could be that, you know, some people are called to intercession, and that's their primary focus.
So everybody can pray, at least.
Everybody can pray.
Right.
And everybody can make themselves aware of the issue, and not just aware of the global issue, but make yourself aware of your local issue. I was just had an opportunity to speak with a pastoral network in Queens, New York, which you would know many of those individuals there, and they're wanting to put together a task force in Queens to start to introduce themselves to the police and say, look, the church is ready to do something. The church in Queens is ready to do something against human trafficking. I would encourage you, speak to your pastors and leaders. Tell them and ask them, what can we do together to partner with other churches and within our church to start to see some solutions? One thing that is clear is that the government of its own admission cannot be the solution to the problem. It's too big and vast, and it's a vacuum again for the church to become what it is called to become.
And it really doesn't change ultimately come one life at a time.
Absolutely, yes. And our hearts long for that. When you try to deal with the issue in these massive numbers, then you get so, it gets boggled down and you get so overwhelmed. And so our heart and your heart should be, Lord, what would you have me do to impact the lives of those around me or overseas that you're calling me to minister together with? I mean, we'd say, look, definitely come in support, come together and partner with us as the Justice Project in our work what we're doing in the U.S. and in Europe.
And you could use funding always.
Funding would be awesome. We're looking to develop a safe house. We have an outreach center right on the edge of the red light district. A lot of things happening in our work in the Justice Project.
Yeah, look, you may be listening and you have funds available, and you've always wanted to do something but not known where to channel it, I can assure you this is a wonderful place to channel your funds. Go to thejusticeproject.net. Justin, we're so proud of you and Rowan and the team there, and believe that God's going to use you in revolutionary ways in Germany.
Thank you so much. It was great being with you.
And friends, look, Justin and Rowan are overseas. One reason is they went to a ministry school that was birthed out of revival, a real awakening movement. And because of that, their hearts burn to make a difference in the nations and to make a difference in society. It's so imperative that you understand the nature of revival, what it is, how it can change a whole nation. Take advantage of the special resource offer, just $20, my entire 16-hour class on revival on one CD. You listen to it on your computer or your MP3 player. So the price is radically reduced. Plus, we're giving you free my book, Time for Holy Fire, my most important book on revival. This will give you a vision and hope that things can change through divine visitation. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or go to my online bookstore, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the online bookstore, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today: don't say the problems are too big. The problems are overwhelming. There's nothing that I can do. Say, with God, I can make a difference, one life at a time. Corruption in society, abortion, human trafficking. Should the church care about these issues? And if so, what should we as God's people be doing?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. I've just spent 1 hour talking with Justin Schrum, Justin, one of our grads working with his Rifle One in Germany, combating human trafficking, these overwhelming evils in society, these overwhelming evils like abortion, overwhelming evils of corruption. I mean, what can we do? What can we actually do as believers? How can we make a difference? And are we really called to make a difference? Should we spend all of our time praying and seeking to win people to Jesus and let justice take care of itself? Or is that a hardened, skeptical position? 866-34-TRUTH. I have another question I want to put out for you. A more specific question. Are you ready? Are you ready? There is a case right now in Colorado. Pro-life group standing in front of abortion mills in Colorado. They carry signs with messages like protect the unborn or let your baby live. But they also have signs that are more graphic, pictures of aborted babies and the like, parts of aborted babies. And the Supreme Court in Denver is allowing an injunction against such signs to stand, ruling they cause quite, quote, psychological harm to children under 12. Attorney Rebecca Messal vowed to appeal the decision to the U.S. Supreme Court. Quote, if these pictures cause psychological harm and can be made the subject of an injunction that opens the door to an end to our First Amendment protection, she said, it could be argued that a crucifix is too gory for children to view under the age of 12. What about the harm done to the babies in the womb that get killed at the abortion clinic? Anti-abortion protester Ken Scott said he shows such graphic photos because they're effective in swaying women against having an abortion. The reason that we have the signs is because when we've talked to women who've changed their mind, 50% say it's because they saw the picture. A picture's worth 1,000 words, and it shows the truth. So here's my question for you. Do you think it is good for Christians who are doing ministry outside of abortion clinics? Do you think it is a good practice to hold up signs of aborted babies? Do you think that that ought to be done, that that's eye-opening, that that makes people realize the horrors of what happens to these children who get aborted in the womb? Do you think it's too disturbing and shouldn't be done? Do you think it hurts our witness somehow? 866-348-7884. Should these signs be held in front of abortion mills? Or is it better to just have scripture? Is it better to just have pictures maybe of an ultrasound of a baby so they see what the child actually looks like? Does it make Christians look bad when you have these gory signs? Or do we want to tell people this is exactly what's happening? This is what's going on inside there, and you need to know. You need to understand. Let me say again, if you aborted your baby, or sir, you aborted the baby that you fathered, if you did and you've gone to the Lord for forgiveness, he has forgiven you. If you've truly turned to him for forgiveness, he has forgiven you, and I do not want to reopen that wound. But I ask you to stand with me and pray as we address some difficult, controversial issues today, that people's hearts and minds will be open to justice. By the way, it is the anniversary, would be the 84th birthday of Martin Luther King.
Give us strength to always do what's right. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire broadcast, 866-348-7884. Talking about the Word of God and social justice today. Talking about a pattern of good works that should be associated with us as believers. Feeding the poor, yes. Helping those in need, yes. Educating the uneducated, yes. Working in various ways of ministries of compassion, yes. What about combating other social evils? Should we be at the front lines of doing it? Of course. I mean, how could we not? How could we be a people who say that we are followers of Jesus, the one who came to set the captives free? The Jesus who said that we should seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. The Jesus that said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, they will be filled. The champion of the oppressed and the helpless. How could we say that we are his followers and not want to make a difference in individual lives of hurting and oppressed people? And can we walk with the Lord and have his heart and not care about the hurting and the poor and the oppressed? Yeah, I want to be honest with you. The main focus of my life and ministry is not, say, feeding programs for the poor or adoption programs for unwanted children. I recognize those are important. It's not the main focus of my life. But I can assure you that I give myself to and the organization ministry workers, we give ourselves to acts of compassion. We raise up and send out people who are making a difference day in, day out among hurting and destitute people. It has to be an expression of our heart. But what about combating social evil? It's one thing to say, yeah, they're starving orphans, we need to help them. There is a disaster in this country, an earthquake or tsunami. We need to be there on the front lines helping it. And Christians really have helped lead the way there. But what about combating social evil in our neighborhood? What about combating social evil in our society? Are we not also compelled by the Word of God to do this? So what's your take on this case here in Colorado? Again, Supreme Court in Denver is allowing an injunction against signs that graphically show the horrific results of abortion. And these signs would be held up in front of abortion clinics by Christian workers, encouraging moms not to abort their babies, showing them the reality of what is going to take place if they do have an abortion. And the Supreme Court in Denver said that these signs cannot be held. Of course, it's being appealed because they, quote, cause psychological harm to children under 12. So there'll be little children with their families driving by. Don't you care about that? It's a valid question. What about the children? Let's not think about a mom with her child walking into an abortion clinic and she's going to abort the baby in her womb. Let's not even talk about that issue right now. Let's just talk about these are in public places. People are walking by. They're driving by. They have their kids. Their kids see these terrible signs, these graphic pictures, very, very disturbing pictures. I was broadcasting from Hong Kong last week and was reading an article online about some woman, Saturday Night Live. I wasn't familiar with her name because I don't watch the show, but apparently well-known on Saturday Night Live, and she's become pro-life, and she posted on her Facebook page a picture of an aborted baby, and the post got pulled by Facebook, and she was threatened with discipline, if I remember the story. I'm reading this story, and then I scroll down, and as I scroll down, I saw the picture she had posted. I got shaken up. If you're listening on the radio, you remember it because it was just I'm sorry. I had to compose myself for a moment. Well, is that the type of thing that should be shown in public, even if it's effective in turning women away from abortion? Is that the type of thing that should be shown in public? So, well, of course, because that's what's happening in the clinic. How could you not show it? It would be analogous to saying don't show pictures of concentration camp victims on the streets because it's very disturbing to children to see what's actually happening behind those fences there. Don't show that. You don't want to disturb people. Or, you know, if some woman was being raped, please, it's very disturbing to hear her screaming. You know, can you please have it in a soundproof room? What do you think? 866-348-7884. I want to share a few quotes with you from Martin Luther King, since it's his birthday today. He said, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter." He said, "As long as the mind is enslaved, the body can never be free. Psychological freedom, a firm sense of self-esteem, is the most powerful weapon against the long night of physical slavery." I wonder if we can extend that quote as well. I wonder if we can extend that into other areas. 866-348-7884. Let's go to Paul in Tampa, Florida. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Dr. Brown, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Great. I picket and I hold signs out in front of abortion clinics here in Tampa, and I see myself oddly agreeing with the Colorado idea. Those types of signs, to me, have never engaged body in any sort of meaningful discussion when they're so outrageous like that, and they are devastatingly outrageous to look at. And I don't think that you engage somebody who may be sitting on the fence or contemplating something by an approach like that. Our curbside have found quite the opposite, that when you're peaceful and prayerful and you're respectfully standing up for an innocent life, that you encourage a better conversation with someone, and it's easier to approach them at the gate with information. Mm-hmm. and alternatives. And I think that you know, they would look funny at me if I brought my kid to see a gory movie, you know, that was in the car. You know, I see where you're coming from, but at the same time...
Let me say this. First, you have my respect by being out on the front lines and doing what you do, which is more than 99.999999% of the body actually does. And because you're actively involved and seeking to be pragmatic, what you say carries a lot of weight. Now, I do want to say I've had this very conversation with friends of mine who felt convicted of the Lord that they were to hold up these very graphic signs. And I've had discussions years back. Is it the most fruitful thing? Is it the best approach? Is it better, say, now with these graphic ultrasounds, to have a picture of a baby, you know, in a 4D ultrasound and just a graphic on top of that, you know, the text saying, "Mommy, please don't kill me," you know, something like that. And there's the perfect little baby in the womb. So I do believe it is a discussion to have. It strikes me, though, as so bizarre that the courts are concerned about psychological harm to children under 12 when these are pictures of children under zero being killed.
Right. That's the reality that we have here on the street, though, and out in front are usually lower income. These places are all in lower income areas, and we have people that are don't speak English. A lot of them are foreigners. I mean, I read a statistic that in New York City, you know, 41% of all births end in abortion, and of those,
yes,
50% are African American. You know,
exactly.
These are disturbing statistics, and we have to come at people, and if we're going to be Christian and live the life of Christ, the compassionate part of us that wants to fight. I'm not saying, you know, that it's not a roll up your sleeves and get in the dirt type of situation. It is, but combination of prayer and tact. And educated dialogue. As a medical professional, I'm out there in my scrubs, and I make no bones about it that, you know, I can produce hundreds of ultrasounds, and you're right. But the mangled bodies of fetuses that have been burned or partially aborted, where they, you know, they take them halfway in, halfway out, just so they can say, well, they were in the womb. You know, these are issues that most lower income people who are getting these abortions and also picking up sterilization while they're there. It's also an extra offer there for them. You know,
and Paul, just to jump in because we got a break here. But thank you, sir, for sharing that. Thank you as a medical professional for being out doing what you're doing. And obviously, we need to be as holistic as we can in what we do to help women that make the right decision. Okay, now what? Paul, thanks for what you're doing. We'll take some more calls on this. And then I've got some other major issues to raise today. Stay with me. God of light, hear our
cry. Send the fire. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on the Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Back to the phones. We're talking about an injunction put down, an injunction imposed by the Denver Supreme Court in Colorado against pro-life workers in front of abortion mills holding up graphic signs, the pictures of mutilated, aborted babies, and saying you can't hold those up because they may cause psychological harm to kids under 12 years old. Our first caller, Paul from Tampa, Florida, works in front of the abortion clinics, shares the gospel there, seeks to reason with them. Himself a medical professional, feels that the signs do more harm than good because they create a more emotionally charged atmosphere and you're not going to help the person. Others who've been doing the same work for years feel differently, but I have the utmost respect for Paul being out doing what he's doing, but we want to discuss this issue. Debbie in Greensboro, North Carolina, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello. I agree as far as the doctor saying that this might not be the most effective way, but to make a law against it, I think is wrong. If we have a legal way of actually killing these babies, how dare they say that we can't hold a sign up exposing this murder?
Right.
I agree with you. They're graphic and they're uncomfortable to look at, but sometimes people need to face the facts of what they're supporting. And I think that the doctor is right that it may not be the most effective. It might just regurgitate people and get them mad, but there should not be a law against it. And
I can't see how you can justify a law against the signs when the law permits the crime to be committed.
The
law commits the act. So the law says, let's not even use an analogy. Use this actual situation. Since Roe v. Wade, we're coming on the 40th anniversary of that. Roe v. Wade basically says abortion on demand for any reason, any time during a pregnancy. In effect, that's how it works itself out. So you can, quote, legally do that all over America. You can go and do that. You can do it in places without parental permission. You can do it where the school, your high school, buses you to the place and you get the abortion, come back. The same school that can't give your kid an aspirin without parental permission can send them for an abortion without parental knowledge. You can do all that, but to have a picture of the end results is too disturbing and illegal.
They can make us pay it for it with our tax money against our will.
Right. Our president is forcing and trying to force businesses, including Christian businesses, to pay for abortion-inducing drugs and health care. Hey, Debbie.
This very murder.
Yeah. Thank you for weighing in. I appreciate it. Hey, Joey, in fact, while we're on this, let's play that clip one more time. These were our president's moving comments after the massacre of children by the crazed gunman in Newtown, Massachusetts. But someone's put this together with March for Life and with a call to life. And take these comments as if our president was not speaking about the slaughter of these kids by a gunman, but the slaughter of children in the womb. Suddenly, it sounds very, very different.
They had their entire lives ahead of them. Birthdays, graduations, weddings, kids of their own. This is our first task, caring for our children. If we don't get that right, we don't get anything right. That's how, as a society, we will be judged. And by that measure, can we honestly say that we're doing enough to keep our children, all of them, safe from harm? I've been reflecting on this the last few days, and if we're honest with ourselves, the answer is no. These tragedies must end. We will be told that the causes of such violence are complex, and that is true. But that can't be an excuse for inaction. If there's even one step we can take to save another child, then surely we have an obligation to try. Are we really prepared to say that we're powerless in the face of such carnage, that the politics are too hard? Are we prepared to say that such violence visited on our children year after year after year is somehow the price of our freedom?
You know, Father, I ask you to take hold of the heart of our president. I ask you to take hold of the heart of President Obama, that the words that he has spoken regarding the slaughter of these children in Massachusetts, in Connecticut, will become words that he speaks concerning the slaughter of the unborn in the womb. And that he will become our most radically pro-life president. Father, I ask it in Jesus' name. 866-348-7884. Back to the phones. Zaid in Atlanta, Georgia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
How you doing, Dr. Brown?
Doing well, thank you.
Oh, great, great. I am pro-life, and by the way, I do love your program.
Thank you.
But I do think that, number one, I'd like to say that I think we should begin to protest the churches that are not pro-life. I think that should be a tactic that should be, you know, that we should begin to look into.
Hey, listen, but there are, just to say this very quickly, there are folks here in Charlotte, colleagues of mine that have gone in front of churches that have abortion clinics nearby where the churches have not been involved in pro-life and stood in front of the church buildings with these graphic signs on a Sunday morning with families coming, with their children coming, and so on. And it's created quite a stir. I was not involved in this in any way. I'm simply reporting something that happened. But folks have done that very thing. But anyway, we only got a minute before the break, so back to you.
Okay, but I do have a 5-year-old daughter, and I think that the signs being that graphic shouldn't be. I can tell you now, if my daughter saw one of those signs, it would really disturb her and really give her problems. And I think that there's ways to go about it by using, you know, through our prayers and through protesting, but we have to have maybe sometime discretion because we are in a public setting.
Got it. Right. And that's the question. And that's why I'm raising it. We need to do whatever we can to make a difference. There's no question. And for the most part, 99.9% of the church in America is not involved in this. That's why we continue to have the ongoing tragedy, the fruit of Roe v. Wade. But what tactics should be used? What signs should be used? That's a fair question. That's why I put it out. Hey, thank you for the call. Friends, let's turn to the Lord. Like never before, let's look to him and say, God, have mercy on our land. Bring awakening to America. Send it through me.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on this Tuesday on The Line of Fire. January 15th, that's also the birthday of Martin Luther King. And it so happened that this day, I've been focusing on issues of justice in society, areas where the church can get involved and make a difference. First hour, we talked about human trafficking, sex trade, prostitution. Last half hour, issues having to do with pro-life tactics and dealing with abortion. This half hour, I want to focus on something else. I'd like to hear from both men and women in terms of your viewpoint. And I'll give you the number, but I'll tell you the question in a moment, all right? I will set it up for you. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Okay, let me set this up for you. There have been some cases reported in India recently, rape cases that are absolutely... some of the worst things I've ever read and encountered. And, you know, 5-6 guys raping a young lady on a bus, the bus driver getting involved in India and then raping her and beating her so violently that she dies of her injuries. This is now being tried in India. Lawyers initially wouldn't even step forward to take the case. And this outrage, and now another woman raped and then killed, and then you hear story after story after story after story after story after story, with little girls raped and abused. I mean, infants, just on and on and on and on and on. And the level of infanticide, women killed, female babies killed in India. Then you have in the Muslim world, in countries like Afghanistan and Pakistan, how many women have been disfigured by Muslim men, by Muslim husbands that weren't happy with the wives for some reason, or a man, this is not uncommon in these countries. A man is courting a woman, she's not interested in her, so he throws acid on her face to permanently disfigure her, blind her. Okay, you say, what in the world is your question? Here's where I'm going. You read about these cases, you read about the demeaning of women in these societies, you read about the degree to which men have this supremacy in these societies. And my question is, if the gospel went into these societies, if the gospel penetrated and these people turned to the Lord, the Hindu culture and in the Muslim culture, would that raise the status of women? You see, there are many that present Christianity as if it were demeaning to women. I mean, after all, in many branches of Christianity, women can't be ministers or leaders. And they would say that you have injunctions, that the scriptures are patriarchal and demeaning to women. And then many look at the gospel today as if that were the case, that Christianity is negative on women and subjugates them in different things. Others would say, no, it's the exact opposite. Where the gospel has gone through history, it has been liberating to women and empowering to women and has put them on an equal playing field with men. So what do you think? As you read the scriptures, as you look at life in the church, as you look at the gospel in history, is the gospel something that raises the status of women and empowers women? And if the gospel flooded these societies like Pakistan and Iran and India, would it make a difference in the treatment of women and in women getting justice in these countries? Or in fact, would it not make any difference because Christianity enslaves women rather than empowers them? What do you think? 866-348-7884. Enslaving, empowering, something in between. Give me a call.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Look, I understand there are so many overwhelming issues in society to deal with that can be paralyzing, but the principle is one life at a time. The principle that Mother Teresa worked with in India, surrounded by death and suffering, was subtraction. In other words, each one we help, that's one less. That's one less person. That's one less person that's going to die in hopelessness and despair and squalor. 866-348-7884. By the way, we had such an overwhelming response to the offer of the free CD, my Acharit message last week, that our shipping department got a little bit backlogged. So we'll get those out to you. If you don't have it very soon, you will have it very soon. we're doing our best to get those sent out to you. 866-348-7884. So if you haven't followed some of these stories worldwide, some of these horrific things taking place with here, share some of this article with you about rape, about abuse of women worldwide. It's something we need to look at. I don't understand how we could have God's heart and have a heart for justice without caring deeply about the tremendous injustice against women worldwide. An article in CharismaNews.com, Christian group calls attention to rape as feature of communal violence. Following the gang rape and subsequent death of a 23-year-old student in Delhi last month, Christian solidarity worldwide is urging that the issue of endemic sexual violence in the context of communal violence against minorities is considered as part of a healthy policy response to the tragedy. The Delhi rape has triggered a wave of condemnation and focused attention on a wider pattern of sexual violence and impunity in India. There's so many things happening. When I read it, I was shocked. I've been to India 20 times, but I'm working with believers there, church planters, folks sacrificially going after the gospel, and Christians who understand the principle of husbands loving their wives and families that are serving God together, that the degree of violence against women in this culture, I was aware of it in part, but these recent reports have been shocking. The degree to which people just look the other way, the degree to which women are just subjugated in so many ways is shocking, devastating. You see it again in other parts of the world as well. My question is, if the gospel infused these cultures, if the gospel infused the Hindu culture of India, or the Muslim culture of Afghanistan or Pakistan or Iran, would it bring liberation to the women? Would it elevate their role in society? Would it elevate the esteem in which they are held? Would it empower them? I say, church history says yes. I say it is only a misuse of Scripture that oppresses women. No, not that men and women are identical, not that women are called to do everything men are called to do or men are called to do everything women are called to do. There are distinctives within the body. We each have our roles and our places. But I contend that a right reading of Scripture is liberating for women and will produce families where women are honored and will produce societies where women are honored and empowered. If you differ with me, that's fine. But when I look at this, this is not the kind of thing that individual action is going to fix in, say, India, where the police are going to crack down more and stand up for rape victims. It's going to have to go further than that. Got some men ready to weigh in. I'd like to hear from some ladies as well. 866-348-7884. Lance in Norcross, Georgia, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Well, thank you for being open and to receive my call.
You bet.
As far as your question is, I don't think we have to guess. I think historically, we only have to look as recently as our own country or as recently as the 1700s in the Methodist movement in England to get an answer. And I think that answer is unequivocally yes. But what you're talking about here is culture change. And that takes a minimum of 2 or 3 generations, even with an intensive infusion, as you named it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think on the one hand that certain things happen instantly. In other words, the gospel brings extraordinary miracles with it. But if you're talking cultural change, absolutely, it has to be several generations because things are so ingrained, things are learned a certain way. Look, when missionaries go to countries now that are polygamous, they have realized that basically the change will come in the kids and the succeeding generations, that you're not going to change that current culture. What's the guy going to do? Divorce 3 wives and then they become prostitutes to make a living? So they have to start at a certain place and move from there. But that's what we have to do. Lance, we're looking at something in America now where our society has gone so far from God and our kids have been raised so far from God that to turn society back is going to be multi-generational right here in America. But we have to do it.
I don't think there's any question about that. I think you're right. And part of that process is the systematic removal of the influence of God in the Bible and His Word and the institution of prayer that God's given us to communicate with Him is being ignored and actually being hostilized, if that's a word, out of our culture. And I can't but wonder. Well, I think God wonders why more of us aren't praying to that effect. And,
right. Sometimes we have kind of a myopic, small-minded view, and we
absolutely.
Just look at what's going on in my own life, and if things are okay in my own life, and I'm healthy, and finances are all right, we had a good church service, then life is great.
Yeah, and, that's kind of our own myopic view. That's right.
Yep, we've got to look, and we also might have the mentality that, look, it's so bad, this is the end of the age, Jesus is coming any minute, which I heard when I got saved 41 years ago. Yesterday, our oldest granddaughter turned 12. When I was 16, Jesus was supposed to be coming any minute. Now, my wife and I have 4 grandkids, the oldest being 12. He's not here yet. So what are we going to do on a multicultural level,
and
multi-generational level?
If you listen to those folks that are focused on the end-time prophecy, of course, you can't help but think that, well, it's around the corner, when Jesus takes His church out of the world. However, I don't think that should be our focus. Our focus should be we work like everything depends on us and pray like everything depends on God, and we form old coalitions, if you will, of like-minded persons to do things like missionary work and individual gospel communication and church-wide, culture-wide emphases. And when you talked in the last couple of segments, one was abortion, one was
human trafficking.
I forget the other thing. It was human trafficking. Here in I live in Gwinnett County, and it's reported to be the number one hotspot for child trafficking.
It's right. Extraordinary. The Atlanta area and then Charlotte area where I am is not far behind. Shocking
right.
And eye-opening, and you say, okay, what can I... The fact is, every one of us can do something. Lance, I appreciate the call and the interaction. May God use you where you live as well. Thank you, sir. 866-34-TRUTH. Dave in Princeton, New Jersey, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
My pleasure. Thanks for the question. I think absolutely the gospel message has the potential to raise the rights of women in those areas of the world, but primarily I think it would happen by penetrating the hearts of men. If it's the men who are controlling the economic and financial and political strings of those cultures, then only by penetrating their hearts with a spirit of humility would they relinquish some of the controls that would allow women to participate more fully. So primarily it would need to come from men, and I think they have a lot to be giving up in that sense, and so that's where the challenge lies.
Yeah, there obviously you're 100% right that the change will come as men have a different viewpoint. Obviously, women having a different viewpoint, they can push for it and advocate it, but it must be men who view women differently, who esteem them differently, who love them, love their wives as Christ loved the church, and so on. who see their partnership and their calling and their value and treat them differently, absolutely, the change has to come in male hearts. Go ahead, real quick. We got a break, but go ahead.
We have any examples of Muhammad's treatment of women to use as examples in the meantime? Do we have anything? Obviously, Christ, we have a wealth of stories to use, but I'm wondering if there are any Muslim corresponding stories.
Well, no, yeah, obviously, Islam with polygamy and other aspects is even though it would speak of itself as being a religion that champions the rights of women, I think we just look worldwide and see that is not the case. Jesus involving women in his ministry was quite exceptional. We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire today as we're talking about the Word of God, the gospel impacting society in practical ways ranging from sex trafficking to prostitution to abortion, to the status of women, 866-348-7884. January 4th, BBC, Geeta Pandey in Delhi said this: on most days, Indian newspapers report shocking new atrocities, a 10-month-old raped by a neighbor in Delhi, an 18-month-old raped and abandoned in the streets in Calcutta, a 14-year-old raped and murdered in a police station in Uttar Pradesh, a husband facilitating his own wife's gang rape in Howrah. But in a country where rape is reported every 21 minutes, even these most horrific of crimes soon get forgotten. Also, a female infanticide is commonplace in India. According to UNICEF, the UN's children's agency, some 50 million women are missing due to the killing of baby girls. And on and on. If, in fact, the gospel penetrated these cultures, would it elevate the status of women and bring about change? Nancy in Greensboro, North Carolina, thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I lived in India for 2 years from 2006 through 2008, and I do believe that the gospel is probably the only thing that will elevate women in this culture, and I'll tell you why. I think that the issue with women is very cultural. It's caste system-based. It's also very connected to Hinduism. You know, if you've got a reincarnation scenario and you can keep coming back over and over again, it changes the way you look at life. It changes mm-hmm. the way you look at people.
Yep.
To bring it home, I volunteered once at an AIDS orphanage. And we went in there and we were taking care of these babies. And the locals were very mad at me. And these are nice people, very good people. A lot of them Hindu, and they said, we'll tell you why we're upset with you is because those children have done something bad in a past life. The sooner they die, the better off they are. They're going to come back in a better situation, and you're prolonging their agony.
Unreal.
So if you look at it from a Hindu's perspective, all of a sudden, all the rules are out the window. I mean, we look at the world through Judeo-Christian eyes. They don't.
Right.
And so you have to bridge the when you bridge the religious gap, then you still have to deal with the culture. But I think it's the first step.
So let me ask you this, Nancy, as a Christian woman living in America, we're not looking at America as the perfect model, but do you feel that the gospel itself, put aside Hinduism, that the gospel message is one that elevates the status of women in society? And,
yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, I think it does. Well, I think that it elevates humanity. All of a sudden, you've got, you know, you're looking at people as God's children, and it can't help but change the way that you view life and yourself and your role in it.
Got it. I fully agree, but I wanted to hear it from a woman as well. Thank you for the call, Nancy. I appreciate it.
Oh, sure. Okay, thank you.
All right, 866-34-TRUTH, Mark in Sarasota, Florida. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hi. Yeah, first of all, absolutely. I mean, the gospel will pretty much take care of every problem we have in our country and around the world. And one of the main problems is a lack of a moral code. And I think if we can go out there and reintroduce a moral code, i.e. the Ten Commandments, then that would pretty much take care of everything. One of the main, well, I can tell you what we've been doing in Sarasota. We've adopted Ray Comfort's Way of the Master evangelism course. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, and you know, we go downtown, and in 2 hours this past Saturday night, we were able to lead seven people through a prayer of salvation. And, of course, we explain to them it has to be a conversation you have yourself with God. Nobody can, you know, do that for you. But nonetheless, we're taking steps in the right direction. We've got people coming to our church from it. And I just want to comment on what we were talking about, what you were talking about in the last half hour on the abortion. You know, I'm not one way or the other on signs, but I was really on fire with this Way of the Master course. And just one day I felt God just telling me to go down to Planned Parenthood. I didn't have a sign. And so we started this thing where we go down on just Fridays because that's when they do the abortions. We don't bring a sign. We just stand out there with some tracts, and we try to have conversations and, you know, lead people through the Way of the Master. And it's really been effective in this town. And, you know, we're seeing, you know, we're taking steps in the right direction. I think that if the whole church could get behind this, because it's, you know, it's biblical. It's what,
yeah,
it's what and Mark, the apostle
yeah, the key,
Paul did
the
key and
what thing
Jesus
is,
did.
The key thing is that we speak about morality with the world, that we make it clear that this is not just a matter of pray this little prayer and Jesus enters in and gives you a better life. It's that we're guilty in God's sight. And I commend everyone that is laboring in front of abortion clinics. You may have different methods. I commend those that are giving their lives for it and making a difference. It's often thankless. May God's blessing be upon you. And you may have different strategies in doing it. But Mark, I agree with you, whether there's a certain technique that's followed, the key thing is that people must be made aware of who God is and our guilt before Him before we can understand our need for salvation. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. James in Winston. All right, you know what? It's okay because I was going to tell James he had to be real brief because we were almost out of time. I spoke in the first hour to Justin Schrum, graduate of our ministry school. He and his wife, Rowan, on the mission field in Germany, combating human trafficking. Why are they in Germany? Why was my last personal assistant and my personal assistant before him, why were both of them serving with me in the ministry, and now they're on the mission field overseas? Why have some of our best folks in our entire ministry organization left here to go on the mission field? It's because this whole organization, this ministry, our school, was birthed out of a revival movement that shook many hundreds of thousands of lives in the mid to late 90s. And because it was a genuine, stirring, awakening movement, many hearts and lives, it birthed out of it a missions movement. We need awakening in society today. Out of that, a missions movement, fresh missions movements will be birthed. Out of that, social justice missions will be birthed. Out of that, righteousness will rise. We need awakening today. I want to strongly encourage you to take advantage of a special offer, resource we rediscovered. I didn't even know we had available. It is a 16-hour course I taught on revival, eye-opening, life-changing, impacting, and practical. It's on one CD to listen to on your computer or MP3 player, and it's $20 for the whole course. And when you get it, I'm giving you with it free my book, Time for Holy Fire, the most important book I've written on revival. Take advantage of the special offer. Call 1-800-278-9978. You can buy multiple copies for friends, your pastor as well. 1-800-278-9978, or go to askdrbrown.org and click on the online bookstore. My bottom line today, as we look at the massive social evils around the world, we recognize that a Band-Aid solution will not do. And that's why we pray for great awakening.